Gamecocks at night, Gamecocks to fight, Gamecocks to debate about what is wrong and right. We have an hour to talk, so come on, let's go. Let's hear from all the Gamecocks on the late night Gamecock show.
Well, welcome in to the late night Gamecock show. Today is July 19th, 2026. And Rob, I don't know about you, but it feels like a quiet week in Gamecock land.
A quiet week that I'm thankful for, man. I was on vacation last week, got it done from the Grand Strand last Sunday night. So I was a little thankful that things were a little more quiet, but there's always something to talk about with us here because although it feels quiet, the time has started for me where I'm rewatching old games. I don't know if you've hit this point, but it's always a July turning point when I start to go to YouTube and start watching old Gamecock wins. So we're gearing up for football season. You can start to feel it in the air, even though it's 98 degrees outside all over the state. I've lost Matt's audio. I'm not sure if anybody else can hear it, or you guys let us know in the chat. Can you hear Matt? Because I can't hear him anymore.
Oh, is this better?
There we go. There we go.
My forearm bumped it. No, Rob, I've done the same thing. I've started watching games and I have everything saved on YouTube TV from like, you know, the last 4 years. And like, it was hard for me because I was like, what game do I want to watch? Should I just start game one? And normally I don't rewatch like the FCS games and even Virginia Tech. Like, I mean, what am I really going to learn from the opening game? And then I started scrolling. I was like, well, I don't want to watch Oklahoma. I don't want to watch LSU. I don't want to watch Alabama, because I mean, last season was just a season of heartbreak.
Yeah, I was at a restaurant last week in Myrtle Beach, and the Virginia Tech game was playing on one of the TVs in there, and so I caught a couple minutes of it, which was kind of fun to watch Lenoris run around and kind of be back in his element. There was a moment, as we all know, where we saw him making some Lenoris Sellers type plays in that game that in some ways disappeared for parts of the season last year, but I enjoyed the 2022 Tennessee shakedown, throttling, whatever you want to call it, the other day. On a shout out to our friend SF Cocking on YouTube, where you have the Todd and Tommy audio with the video from the TV broadcast. So you get a little radio, a little TV action, and you get some booms in there from Todd.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, those are the most fun things to watch. Like, going back and, you know, it's still a regret of mine not going to that Tennessee game. I had a ticket, but they were 22-point underdogs. It was late at night. I'd been sick the entire week. And I watched that game in bed sick and just couldn't believe what I was seeing. But so, look, if you want to go back and watch old games, now's the time to do it. Before we go any further, Rob, you know, Four Quarter Friday, it's launched. Let's give a little bit of time here to it. What's going on there?
We've had a really fun week this week. Week one on fourquarterfriday.com. Make sure that you guys are there, that you're subscribed. You can do that for $1 right now, and then 50% off of the first year. If you want to go ahead and do the year, I would encourage you to do that as it continues to grow. Varsity Forum is a lot of fun, or the Varsity Club Forum is a lot of fun. If you want to get on the message board and talk about your school versus the rival down the road, Who are the players that we need to be watching? We've gotten a lot of great tips there. There's extra scoop on the Varsity Club that's not going into some of these football previews that we want you to have a look at. But we've kind of made our rounds. I think my favorite feature, Matt, we've had some football summer check-ins, a lot of those getting us ready for previews for some of the teams around the state. We've looked at some basketball transfer portal movement, with guys moving out of state, top players moving out of state. We've looked at baseball. We've looked at a little bit of everything, but the live blog each day is a running feature that gives updates of what's happening in the news that day. And I think that's probably my favorite feature so far, is just to have an opportunity to look at the highlights from the day of what's been going on, commitments, offers, team movement, portal movement, coaching hires, You get to see it all there. So it's almost like the morning minute that we have on social expanded into a running piece that is added to throughout the day.
I think that's so cool because one of my friends from high school, he played basketball as well. It was his birthday, I think yesterday. And there was an old newspaper article that somebody posted wishing him happy birthday. I think it was his sister. And it's just so much fun to go back and read like newspapers. And like, that was a thing. It's not a thing anymore. And not everybody is tech savvy enough to, know who to follow on X or where to get your information. So Four Quarter Friday having it in one spot is really, really awesome. I want to thank everybody that's joined us so far. I see Rob giving some shout outs to folks here in the chat box. But we talked about it being a quiet week, Rob. Really, the only fallout we've had is Major League Baseball draft fallout. That's kind of continued on into the past couple of days. We don't expect Will Whalen, Miguel Hugas, Ian Phillips, or Tyler Pitzer to be a part of the roster next year, but it looks like they are going to hold on to Ethan Sutton, a right-handed pitcher who's a closer, and Connor Schaus, who we've obviously talked about a lot, who can play infield, outfield, and pitch. Rob, what are your thoughts on how well the Gamecocks did coming out of the draft when the dominoes have kind of really fallen?
I think, again, Matt, that this is a win for the Gamecocks. When you look at the roster composition overall, obviously you have a couple of arms there that you mentioned that you would like to have. But that's kind of the risk that you have to take. And if you're not going after guys that are going to be a threat to get drafted and go, then you're probably going after the wrong guys. So I think that it's a win-win. You look at some guys that were good enough to go ahead and sign, and that just tells me that the staff has their eyes in the right place. But also for some of those that were maybe a question mark, that were kind of in some gray area, you can see the indication of the NIL that has been boosted kind of competing with where they were drafted and being able to get those guys over to campus to actually play next year. So that's an interesting and really fun added element, I think, Matt, in baseball these days, is because you do get a lot of – we see it in football as well, but the football numbers are a little different than how many guys go in the MLB draft and the decisions that need to be made compared against the NIL backdrop. And I also think that baseball has more variance in what teams are paying in terms of NIL, as opposed to if you're a Power 4 team and definitely an SEC team, you're kind of competing within a certain window of NIL money, or you're not competing. So I think that those are a couple things that I would grab there, and I'm excited to see how this roster continues to gel as we get into the fall. We talk about football, but we'll have these guys getting a little fall ball action going so that we can maybe get some tips, especially from JB, about how it's really looking and coming together.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. And you mentioned that a lot of these kids are, potentially turning down pro ball or had, teams call them during the draft. And it reminds me of college basketball. And right now, every college basketball coach in the country wants to get older. You think about those Villanova teams that won big in March, and a lot of recent teams really that have found a way to get an older roster and a talented roster, because just because a player doesn't go to, the Major League Baseball farm system doesn't mean they're not a really good college player. And I think that's what you saw the Gamecocks do. I do want to give a shout out to Jack Veltri from Gamecock Central. He's a coworker of ours. He did put out a projected lineup for Gamecock baseball. And look, he said it's way too early. So it is way too early. I mean, the draft just finished and they're still going to add more players to the roster. But you're looking at it, you can find his work on GamecockCentral.com, TheBigSpur.com. You can still join, get in here in time for football season. But one of the things that I noticed, Rob, is looking at it, there was only one player who was almost everyday player for South Carolina last year, and Patrick Evans. The rest are transfers, but I pulled up all of their 2026 stats, Rob, and tell me how this suits you if you're a Gamecock fan. 440 hits, 95 doubles, 56 home runs, 328 RBIs, and 83 stolen bases.
Yeah, I mean, offense is a hot topic around South Carolina athletics, period, especially on the men's side of things, right? And we've been having this discussion, Matt, I feel like for years, where it's been like, oh, I don't know. The offense hasn't been great in these men's sports this year. You can track this back beyond the historic downturn that baseball and basketball have had, and couple that with, or add that, I guess I should say, to what football did last year. You've had some offensive struggles, but you can go back even before that and see that just in general, there's not been a lot of fireworks around Gamecock athletics. And so when you rattle off numbers like that, I think that it grabs everybody's attention because offense is such a point of emphasis, especially in the fan world. Now, on the field or the court, obviously it's important because you're going to need to score points or runs or whatever sport we're talking about, right? You're going to need to be able to put the ball in the end zone. So when we look at the baseball field, I think that there's an expectation that you're going to have arms that can compete in the SEC, that you're going to be sound defensively, and that you're going to at least be competent on offense. But I think they've put together, Matt, the type of bats and the type of staff that is going to propel this group to be able to elevate their offense in the SEC. And that's the biggest jump that I expect to see from this Gamecocks team from last year to year one under Kevin Schnall.
Yeah, and then there are some other baseball rules that, you know, have come out over the last couple of days. And, you know, one of them is going to be that system they have in Major League Baseball where you can challenge pitches. I think that's well overdue. If you have TrackMan, go ahead and be able to do it. The other thing that I saw, Rob, is there's something interesting. And look, tell me if I'm wrong, but there's something about only two pickoff attempts, and if a relief pitcher comes in, they have to pitch to X amount of batters or something like that.
Yeah, I believe you're correct on that. I need to go back and research it a little bit as well
while you talk.
You know, the debatable thing for me is contesting pitches via TrackMan, and I don't have a pushback on it at all. I'm for it as you are, but I know that from some baseball purists that has been a point of emphasis to say, like, how much are we going to allow replay to infiltrate the game? We've seen this in college football. We've seen it in college basketball. How quickly can officials or umpires in this case go to the monitor and look at something? And I would urge anybody who has that question, this challenging pitches and using TrackMan is probably the fastest review that you could have. Because there's not the human element. You're literally looking at what the computer can tell you, which is instant. There's not a need to go back and look at it for an extended period of time where it is quote unquote debatable. This is clear cut. So I do think that becomes an element that changes baseball in a way that we haven't seen in quote unquote replays with other sports. Quick side note, I did talk to somebody who works in football pad development over the past year. And one of the things that was mentioned was impact meters in helmets and shoulder pads that are going to be able to basically computerize the strength of the impact for injury analysis. But also, if they can tell where on the helmet and where on the shoulder pad the blunt force happened, that's going to change the way targeting is called too eventually. So not to get us off track, but back to your rules discussion, Matt, yeah. Fill us in.
So that's actually really cool technology. Like, I'm all for technology like that, that can actually fix things that are wrong. But I will say that I just pulled it up. The ABS challenge system, teams can challenge an umpire's ball or strike call using automated tracking technology. Each team begins with three challenges to start the game. And if they're successful in their challenge, they can keep it. So that's a good thing. Pitcher disengagement limit. This is a cool phrase. Only two pickoff attempts or step offs the mound per plate appearance. That's going to be big. And then three batter minimum. Relief pitchers are now required to face at least three batters or pitch until the half inning ends before they can be removed. So you talk about pace of game, you talk about stalling tactics, all of the things that, you know, yep, coaches have used for a long time. And look, is it going to make the game better? Like, for me as a viewer, yeah, I'd rather a game be over in about 3.5 hours than, you know, stretch out to 5 hours. So We'll see what all this does, and I'm excited for baseball. We probably won't talk a lot more baseball unless there's a crazy surprise on the show, but just a quick reminder that Inside the Gamecocks, the show returns tomorrow. I know Rob is scheduled to be on at least a day a week. I'll be on Fridays.
I'm Wednesdays.
You're Wednesdays, I'm Fridays, and then Shane Beamer will be on SEC Media Day on Tuesday the 21st. Runs Monday to Thursday. Rob, you know, what do you hope to learn from SEC Media Days? Is there anything that you think that Shane Beamer or other coaches can say? Or are you going to tune in just to hear the crazy questions?
Okay, so a couple things here. Number one, our friend Gamecock Fan 1897 is in the chat asking if we were going to talk about SEC Media Days tonight. Here we are. We're going to discuss it. And I'll reiterate for anybody not reading the chat that at 8 o'clock immediately following the show, the majority of SEC Sunday night will be predictions and questions for SEC Media Days, working our way through all of those days. We'll do our normal message board talk, and then that will be a hot topic for tonight. But what do I expect to learn? Maybe not a lot from Shane Beamer. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think that the interesting note from the Gamecocks is that Peyton Williams is going. I'm excited to hear from him. You kind of know what you're, at least I think you kind of know what you're going to get from the other two in terms of just your standard question and answer. But when you look at the Gamecocks secondary and the question there is who's going to step into those safety positions? Is it going to be Judge Collier and Bakari Swain for sure on the corners? And then who's the nickel? Is I think between Gerald Kilgore, who I think would be in the lead right now based on what we've heard, Matt, and then Quashie Scott comes in from Kentucky. So that's another guy that you can plug there. Peyton Williams, I know, and David Boosie are two of those safeties, but Jazavian Currents is really going to push. Kendall Daniels Jr. is going to be back there. So I think having Peyton Williams there, I'll just kind of be looking at what is mentioned about the secondary.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of questions. And actually, Jamie Bradford has a really good article on thebigspur.com, Gamecock Central, where he has five questions that he's going to ask. Him and Mike Morgan will be covering SEC Media Days Monday and Tuesday. Rob, you're going to be all over it tonight. And I'm sure the conversation will bleed into Wednesday when you're on the show to recap what Shane Beamer said. But, you know, like I do want to give a quick shout out to everything that we are doing on thebigspur.com, the articles that we're pumping out. We mentioned out Jack Veltri earlier. He's, you know, part of Gamecock Central. We've merged with thebigspur.com. But Jamie Bradford has his questions to ask for SEC Media Days. He has a 50 things to know about South Carolina football this season. JC's been doing deep dives on potential up-and-coming talents. Just a couple of days ago, it was to Marcus Leach. I've had a lot of analysis, data-driven stuff. You know, what happens for South Carolina after the first half of football games? That's something I've written, and there's so much more on it. But I do want to get to the question of the night, Rob, before we hit a sponsor break. And this came from Red Fox One, who, if you've been on Gamecock Central on the Insiders Forum for a while, you know the name Red Fox. But he asked the question, Steve Spurrier often said you needed 10 or 11 future professionals to win at South Carolina. And, you know, right now, who are the 10 to 11? I did some research, Rob, and Spurrier had 7 players drafted multiple times. A lot of players that signed, you know, free agent, undrafted free agent contracts with the NFL. But do you believe right now South Carolina has 10 to 11 or maybe more future NFL players on their roster?
Oh, it's a great question. And this is just absolute like fire discussion. I love the chat is going tonight. You guys keep pumping your comments and your thoughts over there, Matt. Let's count because I know that we have a couple of them here written down. So we'll make our way through kind of the definite knowns, right?
All right.
I think Lenore Sellers is one. That kind of goes without saying. And I think Nick Harbor is another that goes without saying. When we look at the offensive line, Jacarius Peak is a no-doubter for me.
Yep.
And I would say at this point, Shed Surratt looks like that as well. So we're up to 4. You mentioned Darius Gray on that front. He's a 5-star by some outlets. And the point of the star rankings is to tell you how a guy projects to the NFL draft. That is how it's going. So as it stands right now, we should all say, yes, we think so. So that's five. If we flip over to the other side of the ball, no doubters, absolutely Dylan Stewart, right? Like there's no question in anybody's mind that he is a pro. On the rest of the offensive, I mean, the defensive front, I do think Durajaya is one. So that's seven, and Brownlow Dindy is another. So that gives us eight. Okay. I'm going to say at least one of these linebackers plays in the NFL. Maybe more than one, but we'll, for the safety reasons,
we'll go to nine.
Play it safe, we'll go to nine. And then if you look at the secondary, I think Vakari Swain is the guy as well. So that gives you 10. Based on what I've been told, when we look at the young guys, I'm gonna put some money on Currents, not literally, but if I had to put something down, if I had to, you know, bet my health or my life or something on one of these guys that has not played yet for South Carolina, I'm going with Jazavian Currents. So that would get us to 11. Matt, we didn't talk about other receivers. We didn't talk about maybe a breakout guy like a Mike Tyler or something like that. I do think that there is at least one, maybe two more receivers in this group that will get a shot in the NFL. You know what I mean? That there's enough guys that have the build. Somebody's going to break out after Nick Harbor. South Carolina is always going to have one guy that finds their way into the mix, and I think that you're going to see something like that with one of those guys. So, yeah, I would say 10 to 12.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, Spurrier in his best years had, you know, somewhere around 10 to 13 that, you know, signed in a particular class. That's the big question. How many next year will be professionals? But Spurrier also won 11 games in a year when only had two players drafted and then had a bunch of undrafted free agents, Patrick DeMarco being one of those guys, a friend of the show. So I think when it's all said and done, I think you have a minimum of 18 guys that will be future NFL players, not, you know, next year, but over the next 2 to 3 years. I think the Gamecocks have enough to be a surprise. That's for sure. But look, these are the kind of conversations that happen 24/7 on thebigspur.com, GamecockCentral.com, the Insiders Forum. So if this question was something that intrigued you, go ahead. If you're not a member, go ahead and sign up over there. I see Harrison is in here in the chat. Harrison is an excellent resource that we have. He's doing an internship with us.
Yeah, he's
in college, and
he is phenomenal.
An absolute joy to talk to, and he's working really hard. So make sure you come check out all of the work. It's a lot of fun, and be a part of the conversation. We're going to go ahead and hit a sponsor break. When we get back, we're going to have Justin Lyles from SportsCapValue.com.
Morning, Carl. Usual?
Yeah.
Your oldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
You might as well give me one of those Carolina cards while you're at it.
I knew I liked that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, Freddy.
You bet.
JC.
All right. Well, welcome back in. And look, a little side note, Rob and I always talk about like show notes, and we're actually ahead of schedule right now. So let's go ahead and get Justin Lyles of sportscapvalue.com in here. And Justin, normally you have to sit in the back studio for a couple of minutes. How does it feel to come in on time tonight?
It's nice. I do enjoy the show for a few minutes before, you know, we go live. So, I mean, it's kind of give and take.
Well, we appreciate you being patient with us. Off the top here, we had some big action today in the sports world. I don't know how many people follow golf or soccer. I found myself trying to get more into the World Cup. It failed for me once the U.S. lost, but I did watch the last 15 minutes. Or I should say extra time is what they call it overseas, but we're in America and we're going to call it overtime. So did you have any plays on the World Cup today, Justin?
I did. I think it was the only play that I put up during the whole World Cup, and that was on Spain. I believe it was -110 or whatever, money line. So they went into extra time. So I did watch the whole thing, and it's crazy how one team, in the final did not get one shot. Which is crazy. So that's just, I don't understand that, I guess, but that's how soccer goes sometimes, I guess.
Rob, are you a soccer guy?
I'm not a soccer guy, no. I do. Hold on. I love soccer. We cover it fully at fourquarterfriday.com. All boys and girls soccer across the state of South Carolina.
Well, you love South Carolina soccer. International, yeah, I get it. But speaking of international, we did have the Open finish up today, Justin. What were your thoughts on the tournament? Any plays that you felt good about that hit, or things that just went sideways? And that's how it goes sometimes.
Lost a little bit, just under a unit, not a whole lot, nothing to be, you know, disappointed about. I mean, didn't hit the outright winner with Ryan Fox. But it is refreshing to watch golf, get up in the morning, kind of watch some golf. That's not a norm. So I think it's a nice change of pace for us avid golf fans. So I kind of enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, I did too. It's fun, you know, like sometimes, you know, the kids go, you know, to school, whatever, out of the house, and, you know, 9 a.m. I'm watching like a major. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, that was awesome. Yeah. But we do want to pick up where we left off last week. And what we're doing is we're predicting the Gamecock football schedule. And Justin is also giving his takes on their opponents. So you'll get Justin's pick for the Gamecock game, but you'll also hear about the rest of their schedule and the over-unders and which way Justin's leaning, if you'd like to, you know, place a wager there. But coming off last week, Justin has the Gamecocks 5-1 heading into a bye week. The Gamecocks will definitely need this bye week because they are going to play the gauntlet of their schedule. And it starts in Williams-Brice Stadium on Saturday, October 24th against the Tennessee Volunteers. Tennessee is a team the Gamecocks haven't seen in a while. So it'll be nice to get, you know, some shade of orange back in Williams-Brice Stadium and see if the Gamecocks can find a way to get it done. According to Phil Steele, the experience chart for Tennessee is they're the 69th most experienced team in the country. Their strength of schedule is 22nd. And in the power poll, they are ranked 18th. So, again, Tennessee is what we might consider blue blood in college football. Rob, let's talk about this roster and what the Gamecocks can expect to see.
Yeah, the first thing I would say here is obviously the quarterback battle is the talking point. I spoke with a Tennessee staff member, one of their position coaches, a few weeks ago here in South Carolina while he was on a recruiting visit, and asked some of these questions. What does the quarterback battle look like? How are you implementing Jim Knowles defense? How is all that kind of smoothing out? So from a quarterback perspective, I do think that George McIntyre kind of has the arm and the know-how. What the quotes that were given to me were, he puts it from here over there on an absolute rope every time, and he has the accuracy to put it where it needs to go. But then Faison can just do things that you can't put on paper. He's the man. End quote. So that tells me that maybe this thing starts out with McIntyre. We'll see how it continues to develop. How quickly does the wow factor of Faison Brandon come on and overtake McIntyre? I think when you look at my offense, you need accuracy to just move the chains and move down the field. Hendon Hooker has been the best at Tennessee under Josh Heupel because he was so accurate with the football. He was accurate at all three levels throwing the football. And so I think when you have a guy like McIntyre who's been there, he's a redshirt freshman, you got a couple of guys that are inexperienced, that's going to be the hangup. The rest of the roster, Matt, I think has a lot of talent. And this Tennessee team is a little undervalued for me going into this year. I think they have potential for this to be another up year in Knoxville. We'll see how that goes. You got a new defensive coordinator, but I think that the scheme is easy enough for these guys to pick up on it pretty quickly. And he brought some of his guys that he's coached with at other stops and put them into place. So offseason story was obviously having a top defensive end come in and leave the program all in one fell swoop. And the Gamecocks kind of were in that sweepstakes a little bit there. But when you look around the roster, they've got what you expect. Deshaun Bishop comes back and he's a really good back. And then on the, and from a skill position standpoint, you look at the wide receiver group, they got them, man. They have the receivers. And one of those leading guys is South Carolina native Brace Staley, who went to Strom Thurmond High School down in Edgefield. So You got the weapons out there, and they have some highly touted offensive linemen on this front as well. I don't know if you mentioned this, but top five according to Phil Steele. So a group that you would look at that is going to provide some time for whichever one of these quarterbacks wins the battle or whichever one ends up kind of taking it over. So defense is got some studs as well. The linebacker unit is their top unit. So when you look over the course of this group, I think it's a year when they can sneak up, Matt. Like, this could be one of those big years for the Vols. We'll just see how the quarterback thing shakes out. My only question is, if one of them's playing really well, but the other guy is starting and they're winning games and the backup is outperforming in practice, how does Heupel handle that, and can he make the switch? I can really see this becoming a situation where one quarterback owns the respect of the team and is more of a leader, and the other quarterback shows more talent. And then you're going to be in a situation as a coach where you have a hard decision to make.
It's one of those things where I don't know who the quarterback's going to be. I can tell you that, you know, Faison Brandon only threw three interceptions over his last 2 years in high school.
Yeah.
Through 46 passing touchdowns versus three interceptions. He's supposed to be accurate. He's, you know, one of those guys that can really sling it. We'll see what they do at quarterback position. It's the most important position on the field, so they got to get that right. I do think that Josh Heupel can work with McIntyre if it is him, but I think that the natives in Knoxville will start screaming for the prize jewel, top 10 national player.
If they lose a couple, or if it looks slow, it's going to be on, and it's going to be on quick.
And we'll get to the schedule talk here with Justin in a little bit. We'll see, you know, when Faison might make his appearance. But behind Deshaun Bishop, they really don't have a lot of, you know, proven talent or proven production in the running back room. All the wide receivers are big. You mentioned Bray Staley and then Mike Matthews. They both had 800 yards receiving last year. Yep. Ethan Davis, the tight end, is nothing to sneeze at. Offensive line, David Sanders is the name that Gamecock fans remember. The Gamecocks were in that recruitment, and he kind of went to the highest bidder. Which is kind of a Tennessee calling card right now. But they have a very talented offensive line. I would be a little bit worried about their right tackle, Ori Williams. He does not have a lot of college snaps. Defensive line is going to be the weakness for Tennessee. And, you know, as you mentioned, Chaz Coleman no longer being a part of that program is a big gap that they just can't fill at this point. When you put over, you know, $2 million on a player, you can't go find them in the middle of summer to replace them.
Yep.
Linebacker is going to be great. Secondary is going to be good as well. I think that if there is a question for the Tennessee Volunteers again on defense, it's in the secondary, and it's specifically at safety. So we'll see what they do, if those guys have improved, if maybe a new scheme fixes that for Tennessee. Special teams, they have a pretty good kicker. 6 of 6 on field goals inside of 29 yards, 7 of 7 inside 39 yards. So perfect there. And 6 of 7 on field goals within 40 to 49 yards. Stretch him out to 50 plus, just like most field goal kickers, he's going to have some trouble. And then their punter, Jackson Ross, has punted 147 times in his career for the Volunteers. Average net punt, 42.1 yards, 3.77 hang time. So, you know, I don't know hang times, but I just know if the ball is only in the air for 3.7 seconds and you're going to kick it to Vakari Swain, there's a lot of time. There's not a lot of time for your special team to get down there and try and set up, you know, their scheme. So we'll see what happens. They have no All-Americans. That was interesting. According to Phil Steele, no All-Americans. A number of players on the SEC preseason All-SEC team by Phil Steele. So overall, I think South Carolina is just as talented as Tennessee going into the year. But, you know, sometimes the different name on the front of that jersey does matter. And for a number of reasons, you know, pride in being a member of that team, or, you know, seeing that team across the field from you. And we know when they come to Williams-Brice Stadium, they're going to bring about 1 million people with them. Tennessee always travels well. So, Justin, it's time to get to the schedule here. I will say that Tennessee has a Vegas over-under of 7.5 wins. The over is -114. The under is -106. So I don't know if there's a smart hedge here or a smart bet. You're going to be losing money either way you do it, which tells me that Tennessee has one of the more confusing schedules to predict in the country. We'll start week one is Furman. I assume that we're going to go ahead and just put a W there. And then they travel to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, rivals in the SEC from 1933 to 1963. They've actually played 44 times. The Vols have won the all-time series 25-17-2. And the last matchup was 2017. There will be a return trip to Knoxville in 2027. We hope and pray that these out-of-conference games are going to continue. We all know the SEC has to play at least one. So, Justin, in the first big challenge for Tennessee and Georgia Tech without their offensive coordinator who moved on to Florida, what are your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a game that if you're going to take the over on for the season total, Tennessee's got to get it. Is the game at Georgia Tech or is it at Mercedes-Benz? Is it at home?
Oh, is it a neutral game? Did I mess that up, Rob?
I don't think it is. I think it's at Georgia Tech but I'll double check it while we're talking.
Anyways, I'm picking them as far as picking, you know, wins. I think they get a win here.
Okay. So we'll give a win to Tennessee here. I'm sure someone in the chat box will let us know, Rob. All right, Rob and Justin, so don't worry about it. The next game is Kennesaw State. We'll go ahead and give them a win. And then Texas comes to Neyland Stadium. First regular season meeting. They played one another three times in the Cotton Bowl, but they have not played since 1969. He put his glasses on for this, y'all. He's digging in.
Or I'm just getting older. you know, this is one of the games, like, as I know we're going game by game, but for them to get over 7.5, they've got to win between this game, between Alabama at home and LSU at home. They've got to go 1-2 at least out of these three to get hit, to hit that over 7.5. I'm high on Texas. I just don't think it's this week.
Okay. Rob's nodding his head. He agrees with you. Then they host Auburn. An interesting statistic about this game, or data nugget, however you want to say it, is when Josh Heupel was hired at Tennessee, his offensive coordinator was Alex Golish. Alex Golish is now the head coach at Auburn. Tennessee has only beat Auburn once this century, and this will be the third straight home game for the Vols. And Tennessee is 0-3 against the spread in that scenario. The more we do this and more Auburn pops up, Justin, there's sneaky statistics that Auburn might have a pretty good year.
Yes. It's not going to be this week. It's just not going to happen. I think Tennessee they're very underrated overall. I think Rob would kind of agree with me on this.
Yeah.
The question is the defense, like y'all were talking about with the new DC. I like Tennessee to win here.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's just that 0-3 against the spread in this type of scenario with three straight home games was kind of crazy to me. And not many teams play three straight home games either. So that was pretty fun there.
Do one more, Matt. And then I have a question. Do this one, and then I have a question mid-schedule.
All right. So we just mentioned they're going to have three straight home games, and they're going to go on the road to Arkansas. Arkansas has won four of the last five matchups in this series, including three times when they were underdogs. The under has hit four straight in six of the last seven games. So at Arkansas, where do we think Tennessee ends up here, Justin?
This is a game that they need to be very careful. You know, they beat Auburn and then make sure they're not looking too far ahead to Alabama. I'm surprised you're saying that they went under the last several years. So I thought they scored 1,000 points between the two. But I think Tennessee sneaks away barely in this game.
Rob, right. What were you going to say?
Okay, give me what's the record right now?
So right now Tennessee is 5-1.
All right, so have we seen Faison Brandon yet? If he doesn't start the year. I say no. This is where it's a problem, because now you're going to hit this stretch. You got Bama, you got LSU. What do you do if you're Josh Heupel and you're 5-1 and you're squeaking by Arkansas, Justin? Do you make the quarterback change? Can you justify it at that point? This one's juicy, boys. There's a lot going on in there.
I think it depends on what you're seeing on tape. I think it really depends on that. I mean, I don't know if it's a he's just lighting up this, you know, the stat board. I think it's more of how is he kind of managing the game, so to speak, whether they make it a move or not. Now, if he's turning the ball over left and right, then possibly. Sure.
So under this scenario, we're assuming McIntyre starts the season as well, which –
correct. It's still also debatable.
Yeah, who knows? Like, if they start slow against Furman, I mean, if he has a Tommy Beecher-type performance with three interceptions in the first half, I guarantee you he gets the hook. And then it's Faison the rest of the way. But so right now they're 5-1 coming off the road, a road trip to Arkansas. Then they'll host Alabama. The Vols have won the last two of these matchups in Knoxville. However, they have lost 10 in Tuscaloosa. So they win at home, they lose on the road. What's going to happen when they host Alabama?
Yeah, give me Bama here. I just think Bama gets a win here. Fighting DeBoers are pretty strong on the road, so.
All right, so they are 6-2 right now, heading into a matchup on the road against South Carolina. Tennessee leads this all-time series 27-11-2, but Tennessee is 1-3 in their last four trips to Williams-Brice Stadium. And the last visit was a game that Rob and I talked about on the Open, a 63-38 upset win over the Vols for the Gamecocks when the Gamecocks were a 22-point underdog.
Yeah, that was a great game that night in Williams-Brice. I was there and enjoyed myself. It was nice to see as I was fighting for us to cover the season win totals, which we did because we ended up beating Clemson as well. So far as this game, I think this is one of the more pivotal games for South Carolina. I think South Carolina is going to get it done between Florida and Tennessee. We're catching Tennessee in the middle of the year, which is unusual. I like South Carolina. I think coming off a bye, this could be a make or break again with the Florida. Those two games, again, are the most important for South Carolina and how they're going to see how the season's going to turn out.
And then you have the pivotal bye week. Rob, now they are 6-3. They played 9 games. They have I guess they played 8 games, whatever. They have 4 games left. Kentucky is homecoming for the Vols. The Vols lead the all-time series 85-26-5, and the Vols have won 5 straight. Do we think that Kentucky can spring the upset?
No, I think it's going to be growing pains for Kentucky this year. So I'm going to take Tennessee.
All right. And then we go to – gosh, then we go on the road to Texas A&M and the 12th man. First trip to College Station for the Vols since 2016.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one to swallow as well. So unfortunately, see them on the right side of this one.
All right, so we'll give them an L. Then they host LSU. This was crazy to me. Tennessee versus LSU. The Vols lead the all-time series 21-10-3. The Vols won the last meeting 40-13 in 2022. Does Lane Kiffin change things on the road against his former employer?
Well, you know, I said Tennessee's got to win one out of those three, and this is the third one, and I've picked two L's already. So I'm going to say Tennessee gets the upset here.
Late all right, then they close the season against Vanderbilt. Vols have won the last three meetings, own a 79-34-5 all-time record. Last time out at home, the Vols overcame a 17-7 deficit to win 36-23, scoring 20-plus unanswered points.
Vols roll in the Tennessee rival.
All right, so I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I got 8 wins for Tennessee, so we're going to take the over 7.5 at -114. So there we go there. Let's move on to Oklahoma preview. That's next on the schedule for the Gamecocks, according to Phil Steele. And this game is going to be on the road as well for the Gamecocks. So leaving the friendly confines of Williams-Brice Stadium, Phil Steele has Oklahoma as the 23rd most experienced team in the country, the 5th toughest schedule in the country. And in his power poll rank, they are ranked 7th. Overall, Rob Williams, tell us about Oklahoma this year.
I think the biggest thing for Oklahoma is the move at the running back coach position. Bringing in McCullough to coach that group, I think, changes a little bit of what that room can do. And I think their biggest downside last year, I won't even mention the defense because we know what Brent Venables can do. Nobody on the show wants to hear us talk about that. But He is one of the best. The defense is going to be stout. They have their guys. You lost R. Mason Thomas, but you can look at kind of from a personnel standpoint how they can fill that edge position and what they're looking at on defense. I expect the scheme to elevate even the talent that they have there. So then the question for me, Matt, goes to offense. How can John Mateer stay healthy and not be a gunslinger for the entirety of the year? Well, if he is the bell cow and the leading rusher for the team like he was last year, I'll go ahead and predict today. I'm not praying on anybody's downfall, but I'll predict right here. He's not making it through the season healthy. Nobody has their running back make it through the season without getting banged up. And if you try to use your quarterback as your leading rusher, he's not going to make it. There's going to be something that's going to happen. He's going to get banged up. He's going to miss time. So changing the composition of that running back room and bringing in a different face to lead that group, I think, based on what I've been told, Travis Davidson, one of the OU insiders, spoke with us and talked a little bit about how that shift is happening with the running game. I think if they can put the ball in the hands of capable runners, Jay Knott kind of flamed out. He was the big transfer portal grab from Cal, really did a great job over there, and then came to Oklahoma, had some injuries, had some weird stuff going on with the coaches, and disappeared from the field in terms of playing time. They've got to have a running back, Matt, that can go out there and carry the ball in a competent way to get that pressure off of Mateer. And then he can focus more on not turning the ball over, moving the ball down the field, making those magical plays that made him the midseason Heisman winner last year before the thumb injury. Those are the biggest talking points that I look at when I'm looking at this Oklahoma roster. And I'll be on with the Sooner Smiths sometime in August. I look at my calendar to preview South Carolina versus Oklahoma here in just a few weeks.
So I agree with everything you're saying here, Rob. The big question for me is, one, can Mateer stay healthy? This is a guy that has 769 career pass attempts, a 63.3% completion rate, 46 touchdowns versus 19 interceptions. But what I will say is last season, you know, he dealt with an injury to his throwing hand. No one was sure how long he was going to be out. But he only totaled 14 touchdowns and 11 interceptions in SEC play. Only combined for 3 touchdowns in the air and on the ground one time in SEC play. So I think Mateer has a little bit of Steven Garcia to him where he can be truly magical, but he can also sometimes just lose the game for you, honestly. And he's still hit or miss, but you know, this is another year in the system with his offensive coordinator who came with him from Washington State. That's a big deal. The running backs I'll get to in a second and the offensive line, but the wide receivers are really good. I do think that if they can pass block and Mateer can stay healthy, they can put up some numbers passing that maybe you haven't seen out of Oklahoma lately. But we know what Oklahoma wants to do. They want to dominate defensively. And if they cannot establish the run game, which I'll just be honest, looking at their offensive line, you go through it, they're all pretty good pass blockers, at least average pass blockers, some elite. None of them are very good run blockers, and they return less than 250 snaps at running back from last year. Neither of them lit the world on fire in their limited opportunities. Neither of them had more than 130 carries last season in college football. And if you cannot establish the run, it doesn't matter how good your defense is. We saw that 2 years ago. Oklahoma had one of the nastiest defenses in the SEC, and they barely got to a bowl game. If not, I think they finished 5-7. So, and you remember Nick Emenwari when they started, you know, unleashing the pass, the Gamecock defense scored so many points in the first half. It wasn't even funny. The game was effectively over. But this defensive line and linebacker group, I don't know if the Gamecocks or anybody can run against them. So I talk about establishing the run on offense. On the flip side, can their opposition establish the run? I don't know. I mean, this is a top 10 defense in the country, if not a top 5 defense in the country. And their special teams are really good as well. Kicker Tate Sandell, he's elite. He's made 72 of 73 extra points, 44 of 52 field goals, 10 of 14 from 50-plus yards, and 16 of 16 from 40-plus yards. So you don't want to get into a situation where you can't score and maybe they can't establish the run game, but they can kick 5 field goals and win 15-10, right? I mean, it's one of those things that can happen. And their punter's really good as well. Grayson Miller netted 39.9 yards per punt. average hang time of 3.69 seconds. Each game last season, he had a punt that netted over 50 yards. So he's got a boot. You look at their All-Americans. They got 1, 2, 3 first-team All-Americans, according to Phil Steele, all on the defense. Their kicker, we just talked about Tate Sindel, is a second-team All-American. And then Isaiah Satania. So what's that?
Satania.
That sounds right. Fourth-team All-American. They got a litter of All-SEC players as well, according to Phil Steele. So let's go ahead and dive into their schedule now. So, Justin, I saw you take a sip of water. You are ready. They open up against UTEP. We'll go and give them a win there. But then it gets really interesting. They travel to Michigan. The Sooners won last year at home and have won 4 straight against the Big Ten. But this is a new era for Michigan, a new coaching staff, and this is going to be one of the most hype games on Michigan's schedule.
Yeah, I'm on the fence on this one. I mean, I think South Carolina and Oklahoma have a lot of similarities. You know, they both got good quarterbacks, supposed to have a good defense. This remind me a lot of each other. I'm going to go Oklahoma gets the win here. I just trust their kicker. I trust their defense. As long as Mateo don't get his head ripped off, I just think Oklahoma finds a way to sneak out in a low-scoring game here.
I don't disagree. And then you have New Mexico. We'll go and give them a win there. So 3-1 or 2-1 right now, traveling to Georgia. This is wild to me. I guess I got to get used to all these teams in the SEC now. But this is Oklahoma's first trip ever to Georgia.
Yeah, I'm going to take Georgia. I just trust Georgia here in this spot. I think it's going to be a really good game, but I just trust Georgia here.
All right, so we're 3-1 right now against UGA, and then they have the bye week. Really nice spot for a bye week because the next week is the Red River Shootout against Texas. Venables is 1-3 versus the Longhorns in this rivalry.
Yeah, I trust the Longhorns here. I think they get a nail here. I think I think they're on the back-to-back, and a lot of people are hating on Oklahoma, but the back end of the season, I think they're going to find their stride.
All right, so they are 3-2 right now. Then they host Kentucky. Interesting statistic, since 1999, Oklahoma Sooners have lost just twice the week after the Texas game.
Yeah, again, Kentucky's not going to be much of a threat, so I'm going to go with Oklahoma.
All right, then they travel to Mississippi State for their first ever meeting.
Yeah, this is offense versus defense, so to speak. I think defense wins here. I'm going to go Oklahoma.
All right, we got 5-2, and South Carolina heads to Oklahoma. This is homecoming for Oklahoma. The teams have split the first two meetings, each winning on the other's field. What happens in – gosh, where is Oklahoma? Why am I blanking
on Norman.
In Norman, Oklahoma. It's a great season.
I hope I'm wrong, but this is a tough spot for South Carolina. I just don't – see, then I just see South Carolina losing this game, Oklahoma winning. I hope I'm wrong again, but we shall see.
All right. Then they go on the road. They play Florida. First ever trip to the Swamp. A lot of firsts for Oklahoma this year.
Yeah, I mean, I like Oklahoma. I talked about, you know, earlier, I think they're going to run the table after the Texas game. So I'm going to take Oklahoma.
All right. Well, then we got Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and at Missouri. It sounds like Justin's fairly confident they win all of those games. If they do that, that's 10-2. Yeah. And the over-under for Oklahoma is 7.5, according to FanDuel. Over is minus 132. The under is plus 108. It sounds like the over is a smash here.
It is. Again, with a defense and a kicker, a punter like that, and you got Mateer, I don't know why you wouldn't take the over here.
Rob, you agree or disagree here?
I agree. I have them at 8-4. The losses that I have on the back end, there is the Ole Miss game. I do have them beating Texas A&M, but sneaky here. And I wanted to throw one in. I have Missouri beating them. I love the combination of Austin Simmons and Drink, and I think that it's not getting talked about enough. So I think that one could sneak up on them, especially late in the year. We'll see what Missouri's done. Maybe it's a primetime game if they're both rolling at that point. We'll see.
Right.
Well, what's interesting enough there is you think about, you know, Brett Venables and defense, right? Well, he's been in Norman, Oklahoma now for 4 seasons, And the over is hit in the Missouri-Oklahoma game 5 out of the last 6 seasons. So maybe there's some fireworks there.
Drink knows what he's doing. As much as we don't like to say it, he can dial it up. And I'm also betting Justin a little bit on what I said before, which is maybe my tears a little banged up by the end of the year.
Yeah, we're gonna have a lot of games under our belt to watch and talk about leaning into that week. So yeah, I'm with you. Anything could happen, especially in the SEC. Every schedule's tough for every team. So
yeah. So just to recap the losses here, Georgia and Texas. So Oklahoma, if this plays out, will be probably a top 5, top 6 seed in the college football playoffs, potentially playing in the SEC championship game as well. I will say that I think that Brett Venables is a pretty good coach, and what he can do defensively is just a masterclass. I do think this will be one of the toughest games on the schedule for South Carolina. And like you guys mentioned, there'll be a lot of football that'll be played between now and then. And we'll see what this South Carolina offense looks like, because this is a game where the offense is going to have to win. One of the offenses, I should say, is going to have to win the game, because I could easily see this being a fourth quarter game, and, being on the road, it makes it challenging and difficult. But, Rob and I will give our South Carolina picks, probably, Justin, when we get to the end here, when we do the last couple of games, we'll make sure we get you on here as well to give your picks. Sure. Obviously, they'll all be on the record, but you can tell us where we're crazy.
I was going to say, most of them will be revealed before that, because we're picking the opponents, and you're going to work your way through it there. So, yeah.
Right. Well, Justin, man, we always appreciate you. Tell the good folks where they can find you.
Yeah, check us out at sportscapvalue.com, where we've got a special going, $9.99 for the month, $10 a month. So if you lock in now, we'll carry that through football season. So I know it's kind of the dead period right now, and get ready to, pick it up with football. So if you're looking for futures and whatnot, get them in before August. That's when all the camps start and people start putting in bets. So we're going to start releasing those in the next week or so prior to fall camp. So,
well, I'll just say this, look, for $10 a month, that's something you really can't beat. I mean, I've tracked Justin for a while. I've known Justin for a while. He's full of integrity. And even if you just put $100 aside and did his unit system, I feel very confident that you will at least get your $10 back each month, and probably much, much more. But we got to make room for Rob Williams and the SEC Sunday Night Show. So, Rob, hope you have a good show, man. We appreciate you. Justin, as always, thank you. We'll see you here again next week. And I want to thank everybody for being with us here tonight. When you hang out with us, you give us the most valuable thing you have, your time, and we don't ever take it for granted. So thank you so much. And everyone head over to SEC Sunday Night. Talk to you soon. Bye.